Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure, life itself. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok.
And this is the Bad Batch Report. My guesses have been consistently incorrect, and other people instantly recognize your noises, so I'm just going to ask, what noise were you making?
It's sort of Wrecker fighting a space gator, sort of. I think this season all my sounds have been relatively the same. I thought about it today, but, you know, not a lot of sounds jumped out. I guess I could have gone, and done some space yoga, too, but
I don't know. Some space yoga would have been great. I think my favorite record noise was the being successfully sharp shot by Fennec's wit. Which is like, yeah, well, you lost Omega 2. And he's like, basically just processing Dean. That's the sound of a zing that you have no response to that deeply upsets you.
Big zingy.
He got a little zingy. He got a little pew, pew, pew in his heart. Anyway, we are clearly excited to talk about The Bad Batch. We've been loving this show for all three seasons, but particularly, I think, really enjoying what season 3 has to offer. We are up to episode 8, which is entitled bad territory. It is directed by Nate Villanueva and written by Matt Machenovitz, who is also credited every episode, of course, as the story editor. Ken, let's dive right into it like we're diving into a horrible emotional swamp to clear out the landmines. What was your overall reaction to this episode? Did you love it? Did you like it? Did you struggle with it at all?
No struggle. I really liked it. It is kind of intentionally coming down off of the two big episodes last week, which serve as sort of a midpoint, right? So I thought this was is a good, weirdly relaxing, oddly relaxing, despite it being danger at every corner and intrigue and tension. But it's also had, like we said, space yoga. So it was relaxing. I just felt this was a good resetting of what's going on, and really does set up the second half and final half of this series. A lot of pieces on the board, as they might say.
Yeah, I think from a real plot perspective, this was a moving pieces into place episode-wise. You know, I know that there are people who struggle with Bad Batch because they don't feel like the big picture moves fast enough, which that's totally a taste thing. But, you know, for me at that point, it's sort of like, well, I didn't like this Jane Austen adaptation because there was romance set in England. Like, that's what it is. And again, if it's not for you, or you think this particular episode is a little slower and taste is taste. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think it did what Bad Batch does so consistently, where, yep, the plot was pretty straightforward and pretty minimal, and the characters didn't leap forward. But there were some important emotional beats and some important plot beats that I think are absolutely foundational. I think some of the episodes where people have felt like not a lot happened, it's absolute. Those episodes are absolutely cornerstones of what happens in the future. So I acknowledge that it's not given plot point after plot point. It is not leaping and bounding forward narrative wise. But I do think it's a really, really important episode for the characters, in a really enjoyable one. It continues to do what I love about Bad Batch of, I kind of sit and I watch it the first time kind of wondering, you know, what's around the corner, how big of a plot, you know, forward movement is there going to be, how big of a breakthrough for one of the characters. And then I sit with it, and all of the ideas that are both explicit in the episode but absolutely supported by all of the imagery just sort of sink into me. And then I absolutely love it every time, every week. And to me, this was an episode that just totally lived up to its title of Bad Territory. That was all about characters navigating the murky and the horrible and the places they didn't want to be, but know they needed to be. And the way that just kind of clear emotional idea is reflected in every bit of design and makes you feel it. It continues to be Bad Batch always wins on vibes for me.
It's the vibes going, man. I agree with you. Yeah, it's without a doubt. Once again, Pabu kind of being the light and warmth kind of vibe we need, light and life, and you know, a lot of healing going on there. We'll talk about the big theme of that there. And then, yeah, the murky waters. And I've even seen some people complain on social media that it was a little dark. I get it. That's been a problem in modern media for a long time. It wasn't for me. I always say I stumble into whatever TV settings I need. I don't know how to set them. I'm a grandpa when it comes to that. But I had no problem seeing the episode. But I also think the murkiness was part of what was going on. And I'm with you. I'm with you. A second viewing, it not just unveils that stuff, but allows you to just kind of sit back and appreciate that.
Yeah. And for me, it's sometimes it isn't even necessarily the second viewing. Like I was kind of wired and working on a bunch of other stuff. And I started watching it at 12:30. And, you know, as it was unfolding, I was like, oh, I get, you know, kind of plot wise where this is going. And then it ended. And I was just like, what do I feel? You know, and it's about feeling, I think, as much as it is about thinking for me.
Yeah.
Big picture also, you know, I know that we're all kind of poised for what this episode is starting to deal with, which is bounty hunter stuff. We knew Fennec was coming back. We know Cad Bane is coming back. We're excited to see Asajj. Is she in a bounty hunter mode as she was before her death and apparent resurrection in Dark Disciple? So there is that part of watching Bad Batch that is a little bit of like, who's going to show up? Are we to this episode yet? So when Fennec says she's after, a bounty, I was kind of thrilled that it was somebody we didn't know. Mm-hmm. And a super cool, new, badass weirdo. I really liked Sylar Saris, the slayer of Ordo Aris. And we'll talk more about his connections, his species there. Yeah. But man, I'm so glad that wasn't Dengar or even my beloved Embo. I loved that it was somebody new, weird, creepy, and somebody that fit the mood and the all-essential vibe of this episode of Bad Batch.
I love when a character like this pops up in a show, especially something like Bad Batch, and I just tell myself, this character exists at the same time as Andor. Like, that character's running around. I loved all that. Yeah, find a big... We'll get to the reveal at the end of who we think and blah, 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 and all those wonderful predictions and thoughts. But I was with you, too. I leaned forward a little bit. I did my first viewing was had over a breakfast burrito, so I even put down my fork in anticipation, like, okay.
Good.
Yeah. No. And I'm with you too. I liked it because it was I played one of the episodes. And the final foundational point for me is you talked about building things going forward with these characters. The stuff between Omega and Crosshair continues to be really rewarding and really important stuff, as we'll discuss here in a second with themes. But I thought this really did a great job highlighting their relationship as we look towards the end of the series.
Yeah, and I do think in terms of forward movement, I think every episode for Crosshair is a big step forward. This was, a huge step compared to, at the end of season one, I'd rather stay on Kamino and maybe never even get picked up. Okay, I will do a space meditation that you learned from a Jedi Wookiee. Okay, all right. So let's talk about the big ideas, the meat and the vibe and how the vibe shows us the meat. I'm irresponsible with words today. Ken, I'll throw this out here because then, we can get into details. But what I really did like about this episode is I do think it's an episode about two parallel missions that seem very different, but are the exact same thing. Hunter and Wrecker are on their mission, which is all action, and Crosshair is on his mission, which is all internal, but they're dealing with the exact same things, issues of who can they trust, Fennec and trusting Omega with his vulnerability, AZ-3 with Crosshair's vulnerability. This feeling of that stated clearly, if you got to deal directly with your problems, that's what they're both doing. Hunter's going after the answer that Wrecker told him or that Rex suggested him that he do. And Crosshair is dealing directly with his wound. And then on the big vibe point for me, Hunter and Wrecker are traveling into a murky swamp and Crosshair is traveling into his murky feelings. And that's what I really mean by vibe. It really is on almost like a dreamlike, intuitive David Lynch film like level. What Hunter and Wrecker are feeling being out of their element under the water is what Crosshair feels like.
Yeah.
Looking at his own mind and looking at his own wounds. Right. So, I wanted to share that kind of big picture thought because I think that is so much of what the episode is about to me of both of our stories being emotionally and vibe-wise the same story.
I'm right there with you. I wrote down healing and trust and the truth as some of the big themes to pull out of it and apply to our own lives. And without a doubt, Crosshair is removing the mines from his own river, right? He is digging it deep. And I think they work so well together. Yeah. So I'm right there with you on that.
Yeah. Punching out his soul gators. So take me into the ideas that resonated the most with you out of all of the stuff going on in their journeys.
It's really, for me, healing. I thought it was really fascinating to slow down with these characters. Speaking of Omega and Crosshair on Pabu, which, damn those trailers. We know that maybe something's coming and maybe we shouldn't mention it for those that have forgot. So I'm always a little worried. Anytime they're on Pabu, there's like this low-lying tension behind me. Like, oh, no. But I really you know, it gets into healing and how, you know, ignoring it will not make the problem go away. I love the stuff across there, not even taking into consideration that the trauma, the damage, the injury, it could be emotional. And I want to be clear, as we often do, you know, emotional trauma healing is not easy. We live in a time, I think, where a lot of folks are now more wonderfully aware of some of the things that might be causing them harm or, you know, hurting them or, need to identify with them. And I think it's a great era for that. I'm never here to suggest the answers are easy. Part of this, because I was raised, my dad would always say this phrase, does it hurt when you do that? Then don't do that. And I think this is a simple way of looking at a lot of issues. But I was raised by a stoic Russian. So,
it's so great for like touching, you know, a hot stove, and so terrible for, did you have a relationship? Did it hurt? Yeah. Don't ever do that again.
Yeah.
Great for stoves, bad for relationships. Yeah. That's what I think your dad's advice.
Yeah. So I'm just sharing a starting point there. And never want to oversimplify it, but I love that this episode dealt with that stuff. But how important it is to, it's not just that, oh, well, Crosshair, you can fix it. Just take a breath, look out into sunset and all is well. It's acknowledging what the actual hurt is. What is actually going on. That's why I think trust and the truth, he's absolutely having to trust AZ, absolutely having to trust Megan. You would say he already does, but this is the worst kind of trust to kind of believe it. Emotional trust, right? It's one thing trust the Gator River, but, you know.
Yeah, this is different than, okay, I trust you're good with a crossbow or, you know, your energy weapon or whatever, you know. Yep. This is trustfall stuff. This is, you know. Indeed. This is beyond where Crosshair ever was with his brothers, probably, you know?
Absolutely. And you know what, on that too, there's some great quotes I pulled out of just, you know, maybe you're the one that has to fix it again. I want to acknowledge that could be relatively simple. But just again, I think that's just acknowledging what's going on, discovering what's going on. Again, he's just like, what do you, this is in my mind. The shaking of my hand is in my mind. I can't comprehend that. He's not either not telling or he doesn't remember. Dealing with themes of, you know, PTSD and fallout from that, of just what happened to him. I don't know which way, how much is him just, I don't want to say it or I don't remember, but it doesn't connect. And I love, there's two moments here as I wrap up the overall thoughts here on this, Joseph, is I loved Omega reaching out and holding Crosshair's hand to get his hand into position, but also his hands shaking and just the absolute warmth of this character, Omega, always wanting to help. She starts this episode bummed that Rex and Echo lost so many men because of me, and I want to help. Mm-hmm. I want to help. It's one of the things I love in her as a character. And I love the line, you've missed a lot, when he's like, you were on Kashyyyk. And it's a sweet line, but it's a line of healing and forgiveness to me. She is acknowledging what happened, acknowledging his choices, but she's not holding them to it. She's just like, you missed a lot because, you know, you are our brother. You are part of our family. And I just thought that was a wonderful, warm line from her, too. It just was almost just accepting where we're at. And again, acknowledging, there's what happened. We're going to work forward. We're going to repair that. We're going to heal that. But we're still family.
Yeah, no, I absolutely loved everything with Crosshair and Omega. The part of his trauma being that he missed out, it seems to me like just a great way to continue to process. Like he knows he made the wrong choices, or he's processing the possibility that he made the wrong choices. And the hand thing is so great because it is just, you know, let me help you.
Yeah.
But also, you literally need to open up. Your instinct with your hand is to close it and to crunch it down and to see if you can fix it by holding it tighter. Yeah. And she's like, no, instead you have to open it, you know, and let someone else touch it. It's direct, but it's effective.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the stuff that you're talking about with healing, I really thought about from the perspective of this idea of tackling your problems directly, because it isn't solving your problems quickly. It's being willing to go down the really scary path. It is an explicit line from Hunter of ignoring it won't make the problem go away. But I love the way it's delivered and the way it's shot, because I think Hunter was at the beginning of the Bad Batch kind of wanted to ignore the problem.
Yeah.
That all of his brothers kept bringing up different problems to him, of Echo being on him about like, well, we need to be better. We need to have purpose. We need to help our brothers, and him just being like, we just need to survive. We just need to survive. I don't know what to call myself. Am I a soldier? Am I a bounty hunter? I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
And so he has really come to that place of knowing his purpose, like we talked about in some of the previous episodes in this season, but really taking that advice from last episode from Rex to heart of, you can't just run across the galaxy. You can't just hide on Pabu and tell Omega to stay there forever. Mm-hmm. They're going to keep coming for you, and you can't deal with the problem unless you comprehend it, which to me is the really like significant part of just be willing to begin the journey so you can maybe understand what the problem is so then you can fix the problem. It's not a quick fix. Mm. And it does mirror exactly what is being asked of Crosshair, which is you need to understand what is causing what of the many traumas you've experienced is causing the handshake. And I think that's, very similar to what Hunter is, the mission that Hunter and Wrecker are risking so much for, of going out of their element, trusting Fennec when they don't want to, doing all sorts of things that are like, yeah, we really, really don't want to do this, you know? Yeah. I recently rewatched The Big Lebowski. And it was when I was watching this episode and thinking about where Hunter started out, he's kind of like the dude, like he would prefer to just abide.
Yeah.
But he has to deal with this problem, and he's so much growth for him to, attempt to deal with it and attempt to understand it. And know that Crosshair is on the same journey. He's got great insight from Hunter.
Smash cut to Palpatine going, "The bum's lost, Lebowski. The bum's lost.
The bum's lost. The clone's lost."
Yeah. That's funny. No, but I love all this. Yeah, love all this. Yeah, just the simple imagery of you got to go underwater and slice those minds. Mm-hmm. What a great allegory and way to explain self-care.
Yeah, and I think, I was joking about record sounds, but like those conversations with Fennec, you know, they are about trust and about being out of their element, which I really want to talk about. But when Wrecker thinks he's got a zing for Fennec, like, "Even Omega got away from you," and she's like, "Yeah, apparently you can hold on to her either." Those noises are also like him truly processing the trauma of losing her, because I think Wrecker's also like, "Well, it was really sad when she was gone. It's really sad that Tech's gone, but hey, we're back together and we're on Pabu, and I'd rather not think about the sad times." Mm-hmm. No, I got to think about the sad times.
Yeah, these are some really good Wrecker moments, both in action, but we don't get a lot of quiet Wrecker time. I think that's okay overall. I love my guy Wrecker, but yeah, I'm with you on that. And that how that could drive the description for this episode is desperate for intel. So there is a desperation that hangs over that might be this. Trying to put a Band-Aid on this giant wound that they're not acknowledging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think with Crosshair, it's really compelling because it could go so many different ways. And part of it is the fun plot guessing. But it's intriguing to me because it's so important to Crosshair. If what he needs to do is understand, well, first he needs to be willing to even open the door to dive into the murky swamp of his own feelings and past in order to comprehend what trauma is most affecting him. So then he can attempt to deal with that trauma. It's like a, multi-step process, but it starts with, that great quote from AZ3. If you were to elaborate on the experimentation you were subjected to, I could determine the cause. And so I think we're left with this. We're on this journey with Crosshair, too, because we don't know. Like, is there a specific thing that they did to him that is so traumatic he doesn't want to talk about it or has repressed it? We got some great questions in the live chat we did with Alex and Molly, with people kind of guessing of, is there something Crosshair is holding back on? And that seemed really astute when we were watching this episode.
Totally.
Did they make him kill someone? Or I'm wondering if this is going to a story of self-definition.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Bad Batch has always been about like, well, your definition was very clear. You were elite, rebellious, soldiers who did awesome, cool missions and always won. Now, who are you? What do you want? And I wonder if there's a part of him who's like, I have just been a weapon of silent, distant, emotionally removed death. And I don't want to be that anymore. And, you know, he could be responding to specific trauma that he encountered when he was tortured. But it also could maybe just be like a sort of psychosomatic thing of his body saying, his deep down, he knows he doesn't want to do this anymore. So it is manifesting by his body not allowing him to be a distant, emotionless, removed sniper.
Yeah, yeah. It's just thinking of that line of, you know, he's almost hitting his targets, but close doesn't, you know, work as a
it's a either a hit or a miss.
A hit or a miss.
And yeah.
I again thought of my dad's advice that so many had of growing up of close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Just my dad, a lot of great advice just flowing my way.
That's good video game advice.
It is. But anyways, to connect that to what you're saying here, you know, we might get, I think the reveal what happens to Crosshair is tied to the bigger picture in terms of plots and checklist of ideas and theories that may or may not come true. But I love how you're looking at it of identity. This has come up a lot of just like the shaky hand is absolutely representative of what you were is no more. And how can you come to that? So your idea, dare I say, theory that has something to do with, this isn't me anymore, but I can't come to grips with that. Literally. I just stumbled into that. Sorry. Does that count as a wordplay or pun?
Yeah.
But I can't come to grips with it. And having to identify that to begin healing and just slowing down and breathing and look into that sunset on Pabu like a postcard that we all could need to see every now and then. I thought that was wonderful, and that could lead to some truth for him.
Yeah, yeah. If he's struggling with this is my only value, and Omega is right there, and I think his brothers would be like, no, it's not, man. This is not your only value. This is not your only value.
Indeed.
I'd love to talk a little bit of this specific idea of being out of your element. You know, there's healing stuff that you're talking about. There's attacking your problems. There's some trust stuff I'd still love to talk more about. But I think in some ways, like vibe-wise, the out of your element was like the most emotionally affecting to me and the kind of thing that sat in my gut after I watched it is Hunter. We've watched Hunter and Wrecker go and the whole Bad Batch go on lots of wild missions where things go out of control and they have to punch strange monsters and all that.
Yeah.
But there's such an element that they are out of their element, literally, physically in the swamp. You know, they're underwater in heavy armor. You know, there's tunnels, there are trap doors. They're fighting a bounty hunter who is absolutely, it would seem like, literally in his home turf with traps, but also like in an environment that he understands and is suited to him. So there's like the straightforward environmental stuff of them being out of their element, you know, even down to like needing the air masks, you know, like this planet you simply by existing here. But the other part of it was they were out of their element at subterfuge and navigating the bounty hunter world. And there's lots of great conversation about like, well, we really need to know what that M count thing is about. They get the lead from Fee, like, well, we got to ask a bounty hunter. Well, we know this one. And they had that great, they even kind of stand out at the bar there, right? Of like, they can kind of get away with it, but they're like, you guys aren't like casually blending in with the crowd, you know? This isn't, you know, Obi-Wan, you know, styling up are and making a deal with Chewbacca. Fair enough that Obi-Wan, you know, does draw some attention to himself with the lightsaber in it.
A little bit.
But they have that conversation about like, well, we don't trust Fennec enough to let her know why we're asking. But they're not card sharks. They're not poker faces. They have no idea how to play that conversation. So they just have to bumble into it and, you know, to me, immediately fail is my reading of Fennec knows that this has got to have to do something with Omega. She's got the call at the end. We can talk more about, but like they're totally out of their element at, you know, any sort of misdirection in dealing with Fennec or subterfuge. Mm-hmm. And there's this great sense of like, it's almost like, you know, if you've never been to Vegas and you've never played poker and you're like, but to save a loved one, I'm going to go into Vegas and play with some high rollers and pretend that I know what I'm doing. Well, that's my business. And can you flip a fiver? Is that how you say it? There's a whole sense of like, they're comically out of their element and so committed to the necessity of their mission that they go through with it, you know?
Hit me, sir. You have an 18. Hit me twice? Yeah. It's Vince Vaughn and Favreau at the high roller table and swingers. I love all this because you're so right to point out they're not lost when it comes to action, missions, doing some sort of bounties, dealing with bounty hunters. All those things have been done before, but they're in such a raw emotional state. Again, this desperate need for intel. The intel is about Omega. So, yeah, their drive is different. What they're trying to do is different. And I had the same thought of just like, take your GD masks off, man. You're in a bar. You're dressed as clones. Like, at least take the masks off and act normal. There's some great comedy there with the Rodian and all that kind of stuff, but Fennec's always in control. And obviously, there's their right to not completely trust her, even if they have to, because of what happens in the end we'll get to. But yeah, I'm with you. Out of the element. You're over the line, Donnie. You're out of your element.
Yeah. And this is our day to talk about Swingers and Big Lebowski. And welcome to a celebration of 90s cinema while we discuss Bad Batch. Not to undersell Fennec. I think we knew that she was coming. We've got to spend some time with her in Bad Batch. Ming-Na Wen's performance is amazing. This is maybe one of my favorite Fennec appearances. I think like she's always played is the cool, calm, collected person. But This dynamic really let us focus on Fennec as, you know, master assassin with the blaster bolt strategy and zingers. Cool, calm, collected, knows what she's doing, able to kind of manipulate people. Like in the delivery on, when they sit down with her and kind of start to make a stumbling deal, and she has to explain to them, this is how you approach a bounty hunter. Right? See, the way this works is you tell me what intel or target you're after, and I give you a price. Like, she is immediately holds all the cards in that dynamic and does throughout the episode.
Just on Fennec alone, I wanted to say, just this character, Fennec Shan, Ming-Na Wen, is excellent in the performance, no matter what the format. It's a character that's new, and it already feels so familiar and old and lived in a part of the Star Wars story, like she was always there. So I'm with you just that alone. But yeah, great episode for her. Always.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then so I think for me, part of why it resonated is just feeling Hunter and Wrecker being out of their element in bounty hunter dealings, you know, being out of their element working for her and being, you know, told, you gotta go under the water. I think that's it. I think that to me was like kind of a little bit different than their other missions of like, yep, you don't know what you're getting into, but you have to run. You can't question it at all. You can't come up with a plan. You just have to go do it. Under Omega's guidance. And then I think Crosshair's journey is the same of letting himself be medically examined by AZ3 after being tortured for a long time. You know, is not his forte.
Yep.
Even considering that it's a mental or emotional issue is not his forte. And meditating is deeply him meditating. There's that great contrast of, you know, him meditating ends up being so peaceful and lovely and such a, you know, potential big step forward to him. But it's as terrifying as you know, going under the murky swamp water for him. He's totally out of his element.
I absolutely agree with you on that. That's why I was drawn to some of the Crosshair stuff. It's quieting down is something I'm okay with. I can wait in a line like no one else. You got a 4-hour line for Disneyland ride. I don't like it, but I'll get through it there. But if you want, just ask me to slow down and spend time with myself on these issues. It's a murky river indeed. Again, I'm finding myself more connected to Chrysler than I ever expected, including in these a grump who doesn't like anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, I want to enjoy meditation, but the reason that I struggle with it is I can be a go, go, go person, mm-hmm. and I want to be like, what's the goal? What's the purpose? And like, yeah, the purpose is to relax.
Right.
The purpose is to be present in with whatever thought you're having. And that really resonated to me with Crosshair of like, it's not like he's a go, 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 loud, impatient person like Wrecker or a super analytical person like Tech. He even says, you know, earlier in the season, what you need to be a great sniper is patience.
Yeah.
So I think the difference in this meditation is the idea of this is kind of what you do when you're getting ready with your sniper there. You're patient, calm, utterly focused, but then you have a purpose,
yes.
and a mission. And your purpose and your mission is destruction. Mm-hmm. So can you take all those skills that you have, being still and silent and focused and aware of your breathing, which a sniper has to be,
mm-hmm.
can you do all of that without it being destructive? And can you do all of that without serving a purpose for someone else? Can all of those skills be just for you?
I love taking this and connecting to our real lives as we be more and more open on Therapy Center. Can you do all of this but not create content? Can you just sit? We don't have to record a podcast. We don't have to pull out a video. You don't have to plan a script. You don't have to do anything. Just be you. And it's about the title to me. It's Sniper versus Crosshair, right? It is the sniper of the group, the sniper of the galaxy versus yourself. Crosshair, what you can do? It's, you're right. It's the same stuff. He's got it. You're right there. Not unlike Hunter and Wrecker. You're doing a lot of same things you've already done. Why does it feel so different? You got to identify that, and then you can move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Very much agreed. Very much agreed. And yeah, just a beautiful episode. It's amazing to see how far Omega and Crosshair's relationship has come. And, mm-hmm. You know, ton of great just individual moments that we will talk about later in the show. You mentioned trust being a big part of this for you. Do you have any other thoughts on the big idea of trust in this episode?
Well, I'll tell you what I liked about it is I don't know if this is a dark nihilistic view of trust, but like, again, they're right. Fennec in the end seems to have sold them out in some way, shape or form. Not like Sid.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, yeah. We'll see. We don't know.
Maybe we'll talk about it. Yeah.
We don't know. Mm-hmm. So they're right along the way, but that's the magic of trust, right? It sounds like simple. Sounds like we're at some, corporate conference. This is why we're doing these trust falls. You still have to. You still have to have it. You have to make the choice to have it, even with the risks that come with it. So, yeah, I agree that it's open-ended on Fennec. And I think also it helps that we all know where Fennec ends up emotionally, looking ahead to the book of Boba Fett, and even some of the stuff she's already shown around Omega, and even clarifying, I protected her in a weird Fennec bounty hunter way. So anyways, yeah, that's kind of where I went, the journey of trust. You got to take it. Even if you know it's perilous, you got to take it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I think that's what's great about this episode because, you know, I was talking with my wife, talking about Therapy Center, about like, hey, I'm feeling stressed, I'm feeling overwhelmed, but I might take on this other task. Mm. And she was like, well, why? And I said, because I ran through the reasons to do it, and I realized my main reason was it would be easier not to. And if I let myself follow that train of thought for everything, I won't do anything.
Mm.
Because it's always easier not to do things.
Right.
And I feel like Hunter and Wrecker being so aware of we have to push ourselves into a place of deep uncomfort of we can't trust Fennec. Our only way we might trust Fennec is that she's straightforward, that money is everything to her.
Right.
You know, and we've been down this road with Sid. We kind of tried this hat on ourselves, like Wrecker saying to her of like, oh, so you just good or bad doesn't matter. You just do it for the money. Like, Bad Batch early on was like playing with that idea of like, yeah, well, maybe that's, yeah. you know, we just need to survive. We just need money to survive. We just need to do jobs for Sid. You know, maybe that's all we need to do. Maybe that's all we need to be. And Echo is like, I can't. I need a purpose. I need to, you know, to let my brothers go. So I think there's a lot in there having to trust Fennec.
Yeah.
That is bringing up issues for them, twisting the knife on their feelings of failing Omega. But that utter commitment to helping Omega that they have no choice but to try to trust Fennec.
Yeah. You got to do it. You got to do it.
Yeah.
It's part of that. You got to go to that title, desperation, that desperate feeling.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Got to go in that bad territory. Yeah. And then, it, you know, very, very clearly, you know, this other story of trust of Crosshair trusting Omega of like, we know each other enough. You know, Ed, I don't really want to do this, but I think there's an awareness of, I'm not going to like this.
Yeah.
There's a great joke about it, but there's an awareness of she's not going to hurt me.
Yeah.
She's not going to laugh at me, betray me, you know?
Yeah.
And so that a different kind of, you know, stronger trust there was great. And this contrasting stories of trust.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just her desire to care and heal and help has been so, you know, prevalent that, you know, without a doubt, he feels it. And it's just wonderful to see that grow.
Yeah. Any other big picture thoughts before we take a quick break?
Double checking the notes I did take. No, I did want to, you know, we talked about the environment of Pabu versus the murky, unclear atmosphere. I want to congratulate Florida for making Star Wars, the Florida Everglades, showing up for this episode. So not a theme, maybe, not a lot.
Maybe a theme park. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. they really did go to Space Florida, didn't they?
They really did.
Well, that seems like a good place to take a quick break. We will be back in a moment to discuss more about this great episode of The Bad Batch. Back in a moment.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And we are back to continue our discussion of bad territory. That's right. I think there are several A's in the way you should say this title. Bad territory. We always like to talk about some of the canon stuff. There's definitely some just kind of straightforward stuff with some mentions of video games and stuff like that. Not in-world video games, but we'll get to that. But I want to talk about the big picture stuff. I think one of the big canon pops for this episode was this whole idea of M Count Hunters, that Fee gives them the intel that certain class one bounty hunters have been retrieving M Count targets for the Empire. I went, ooh, and then felt perhaps a million think pieces being typed about what exactly is going on with that. So where did you go with that? Did you think about, is this just another way to phrase, hey, they're bounty out any Jedi, any Force user, you know?
Yeah. It keeps in line with a lot of stuff that's always been at Palpatine's heart. This is what he's been doing, kidnapping Force-sensitive kids and sending Cad Bane to do it, all those kind of things. I with you, too. Sometimes, maybe Force Center should just be an Easter egg channel. We'll put that red arrow pointing to, did this mean Din? Like, we'll just, you know, put that out there and get a million views. But I did like the connection. It made a lot of sense. It also made me think of the Bounty Hunter Guild and what you got to do. Toro Calican, class 10. Was he class 10? And you got to work your way up to one.
That was like my third thought was like, what class is Dengar? You know?
We know what I like about Dengar. Dengar was class one at one point. But he slipped. Slipped his way down. With every bandage that he wrapped around his head, he went down a level.
Yeah. No, I mean, I suppose he's, you know, he's on Vader's short list unless he got... Unless he, you know, was not supposed to be there, and it was an awkward, like he wasn't, Dengar wasn't supposed to be here.
I asked for class ones.
I asked for class ones. Bounty Hunter, we don't need their scum. And one of them is a class seven.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. So the class stuff is fun. I think there is the class one list, you know, at this time you one imagines is Cad Bane. One imagines young Boba Fett is not up to a class one at this point in the timeline. I think Embo is a class one.
Class one A.
Class one A. But I think I wonder if did you feel like there's any sort of like, but hey, the Inquisitors are hunting the Jedi. What is this about? Or do you just feel like, yeah, the Inquisitors are that's their main mission, but why not also have a standing bounty offered to only the very best?
No, I think the Inquisitors, that might be their mission, obviously might be a little bit more policing it in a sense, destroying versus capturing. I'm sure capturing's on the docket as well, but this one's good subcontract work, you know? Like, I need you all on point. This is what you as Inquisitorius are doing. We got class ones to go get potentials. You know, and how far spread is this? I don't think any bounty hunter knows who Hemlock is or what he's doing or anything, the details of it. M count might still be, again, a term that's known but not fully understood by a lot of people in the galaxy. But I like kind of getting into the weeds of the canon work there. Here's your hiring packet as an Inquisitor. It does not include the bounty hunter work.
Yeah, and it could be, you know, anyone that is force sensitive that Palpatine is aware of, you know? So there's the general, like, is M count target just a term for Jedi and Force users, or there is also, is this a more specific assignment related to cloning, which is why it's only class one, really restrictive, not just a, hey, because on a certain level, Palpatine blamed his scars and, you know, all these problems on the betrayal of the Jedi.
Right.
So he can be kind of public if he wants about Jedi, I would imagine, of just saying like,
yeah,
there's a bounty. Hey, you know, do you want to be one of Palpatine's kids? Palpatine's kids report anybody in Jedi robes, right? Like, he could be public about it. So I,
is this the Little Lebowski Urban Achievers? Is that what's going on? Little Palpatine Urban Achievers?
Are you a Palpatot? You need to report a Jedi if you want to be a Palpatot.
Dark.
Yeah. Upsetting. Mm-hmm. So there's also this part of me that wonders if this is more specifically like, we need more cloning subjects.
Yeah.
And this is,
I like that. Yeah. I
mean, yeah. So who knows? I'm sure we'll get more.
It's been a wonderful mystery from going all of us in the fandom joking about M count, even going back to the first time we heard it pop up on Mandalorian, to now it being, you know, it having a purpose, a mm-hmm. word, a description that hides what it really is to those in the galaxy. I really like that as it's played out.
Yeah, and the people who us among us who want to hear midi-chlorian eventually. It seems like, I think we're going to in Bad Batch, right? I mean,
I think so. Right?
Hunter's on a mission. Basically, when Pershing said it, we all, many of us in the fandom, had, you know, the joke of, oh, come on, say the word cowards, even kind of, you know, joking at the tension sometimes between Favreau not initially being a prequel guy and then so many prequel ideas really making their way into Mandalorian and Favreau embracing it more and all that. So that's the way I felt like we reacted to Pershing. But now it's the plot of the bleeping show.
Right.
It's like what Hunter is searching for is Idalorian. He's got him. He's now searching for the rest of the damn word and what it means.
He's on Wheel of Fortune. He's looking for some vowels. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I you know, without a doubt, the first use of M count, I think there's some meta stuff to it. And it that still might all be true. I don't think this was all completely hatched out and connected. I think this is something that emerged. This is what you and I talked about. The tip of the iceberg storytelling is always present in Star Wars and always creates potential for new storytelling. Even if a stormtrooper hitting his head accidentally on set becomes a way to tell stories or to work it into future stories. So I'm with you. I really like that. That is the plot. We're trying to discover what midichlorians are. Like that's fun.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. And what they have to do with Omega. Yeah. So along this sort of whole M count hunters, you know, program where only class ones can do it, and the whole deal, the plot of this episode is Fennec hasn't done it herself, but claims she knows one who does, and claims that she's going to get that information back to Hunter and Wrecker. And then she makes a call at the end. And I think when I watch it the second time, I feel like there's lots of wiggle room there. Of we don't know who she's talking to. She is saying in a sort of menacing way of like, it should be pretty easy for you to I'll send you the information I have about these clones that were asking about M count. Should be pretty easy for you to track them down.
Yeah, because they walk around in clone outfits, clone armor, painted multicolors. Yeah.
One literally cannot speak softly.
You'll
can't even groan softly.
You'll find it.
You'll hear Wrecker. But there is, she could be contacting someone who wants to find the clones to help.
Yes.
There is no guarantee. I think Fennec is savvy enough that she figures out this has to do with Omega. Like,
yes,
the cloners wanted her. Now these guys who seem to, their only mission in life is to protect this girl, are asking me about this. This is clearly about Omega. Fennec does seem to have a little bit of a soft spot for Omega.
Totally.
I like the ambiguity right now. I don't know if she is calling someone to sell out the clones, and this is how Pabu is destroyed, or if this is saying, I have somebody, I have a contact who is also interested in answers about M count stuff, and I got a lead for you. This is some people for you to talk to.
This is amazing. Yeah, you've been putting some ideas in my head. Now, first of all, I think the Hidden Path Truthers are probably really excited that this could be Ventress, and Ventress has a vested interest in what's going on, and Quinlan Voss might be around the corner there on that hologram. Who knows? I'd be excited for that. I don't need everything to be a complete twist mystery that I don't know. If this is Ventress, I'm excited. But also what you just said, you know, pretty easy to find. And if you track them to Pabu and things go wrong there, that this could be some sort of Imperial agent as well. Hemlock's possible if he's out and about, or some, you know, using all his resources, all those things.
That's
kind
true.
Of liked about. It could, but that's what I like. It could go a lot of, cause, you know, I even had a moment of like, Cad Bane. I'm like, no, wait, they don't really get along. Right. Like that's kind of the first appearance of Cad Bane. And then I was trying to track it. I didn't have time to watch Book of Boba Fett again this morning, but she may obviously probably was aware of Boba Fett at one point. You know, she gets that. We kind of have that vibe, but like, I don't really think they start hanging out until he saves her, you know? So it's like, Imperial, Ventress. Flip a coin for me at this point.
Yeah, I don't think it's Cad Bane. It doesn't feel right for Boba. I think if Boba shows up, I think it's going to be him trying to finally claim the mantle of being a class one. You're very right. I was thinking about that as we were talking. The Rampart made such a big deal in Palpatine's conversation of, you have all the resources of the Empire. I don't think it's just like Embo, or why be mysterious about it. As much as I would love to see Embo,
one day,
maybe she is calling, you know, the CX agent that we were all wondering about, since we do have some identity mystery being
CX3.
You know, maybe she's getting some, getting a bounty from the Rampart side of things, but. The possibility of it being Ventress was really interesting to me because we don't know where Ventress is at. In theory, if class one bounty hunters are being asked to track down anyone with a high midichlorian count, depending where she is in life, Ventress is both hunter and hunted in that scenario. Potentially.
You're right. There's enough warmth and a ray of light in Fennec's heart around Omega. And there's enough hope, I think, in a lot of us that if whatever we're going to find out, Ventress coming back in whatever form she's back or however she came back, if it's relatively the same character, not super affected by being brought back by death, that she would have a little bit of warmth in her heart, I think, as well, especially if Quinlan's still around, as we see in Kenobi. That's where I'm leading. But yeah, Hemlock and his 007 credit card of his Imperial credit card for the resources works for me as well.
Yeah. It's fun to speculate, and it's fun to not know, and I can't wait to find out. And I'm sure it will all click into place well. I can't wait to find out those truths. I also wanted to check in on the old Omega being Force-sensitive thing. It's been such a big conversation among Bad Batch aficionados of what ultimately is the deal with Omega. We know that she is... you know, an unaltered clone of Jango, so kind of a pure DNA. It was one reason that she was wanted early on. Nala Se wanted her to emotionally protect her, but now the Empire wants her because her blood is one of the only things that'll help make some sort of Palpatine clone, most likely. This episode, the fact that the plot of the show has become about figuring out the M count business. It puts such focus on that. And to me, it's not like, oh, slam dunk. Omega's going to be force sensitive. But I think the fact that we were reminded of her time with Gungi, and there's no reason that she couldn't just learn meditation from a Jedi. But I did finish watching the episode. That's like, the central mystery of this is will they figure out what M count means while we have shots of Omega meditating, saying very Jedi-like stuff because she learned it from a Jedi. But it, none of it is like concrete evidence, but it's just so much focus and mood on Omega as a Jedi-like presence.
Yeah.
Is this episode making you feel it's more possible that this could be a story about Omega being a Force-sensitive clone?
My eyebrows raised a bit. Not just the reference of, you know, learning it from a Jedi Wookiee that we all love. I think in this post-Sabine world, even a post-Finn world for me, of just, you know, these different kind of connections to the Force and how we view them and how we've always taken them as a Star Wars fandom, going back all the way to the 70s. I have to go in the murky water and unattach the mind, disconnect the mind. I don't want her to be Force sensitive. I don't have a big answer for that. It's not that I think there's too many or they're going to the well or no. I don't know. I just don't want it. That's a feeling I have, but I can't help but think of that. I mean, I'm just thinking too of just like wouldn't her blood tests show a midichlorian count? Does Nala say know that? Does Hemlock now don't know that and just hasn't said it? Or do we not have that information? I've always just think, well, she is a vessel that can carry and not the M count count. The M count count of Palpatine doesn't disintegrate or go down in any way, shape, or form. And that's where I've gone. But you're right. It's this idea of the forces around all of us, binds all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And she's tapping into it.
Yeah. And it's just kind of putting a spotlight on it. Yeah. Like I think for me, it does make sense that, that the Kaminoans would want to try to say, hey, can we make our clones tap into this power? And I think the thing that makes me okay with it any old way is because if Omega is Force sensitive on any level, if it is a very Finn-like, I sense connection all around me, or my aptitude in the Force, you know, allows me to really, you know, pay attention and quickly master the skills of those around me. Whatever it is, I think it's been there from the beginning in terms of the writers. If she is Force sensitive, I think that's been the idea from day one.
Yeah.
And that gives me trust in it, because all the plotting of Bad Batch seems so sure-footed, and there are different kinds of creators, there are different kinds of writers that Favreau has talked about, you know, wanting to be open to ideas. I have no evidence for this, but I think he quashed the Mandalorian books because he didn't want to be, you know, bound by anything.
Yeah.
Again, no evidence for that. That's just an opinion.
Sure. A feeling.
A feeling. It's a feeling. It's a feeling. But I just, the way that Bad Batch has been plotted feels like they knew the end of this. They knew the end game for Omega when they started writing, is what it feels like to me. I could be wrong.
If there's the series is dealing with this big picture of clones and clone identity and it's clone troopers, and we have this, correct me if I'm wrong, pure clone, right? Omega. With this pure clone, it'd be quite a powerful statement to say, yeah, even the Force recognizes them as living beings, right? They are not weapons of war. They are not mass-produced copies. They are humans, as Yoda tells what four clones at the beginning of the Clone Wars series. You have you are unique, and to have that have to play into this big theme, and that yes, we got warriors reestablishing themselves. We got the clones after being replaced by TK. All these kind of wonderful things that we're dealing with here, and then also, oh by the way, the Force sees it as well. I could work for it. And see now you might be pushing me off my grumpy crosshair mouth.
Open your hand, Ken. Open it. I can't wait to see that. I can't wait to see what the end game is, because I know I'm gonna enjoy it because I've enjoyed so much of the show. Some other little things. Ordo Eris and the Haxian Brood. Ordo Eris is a space station in the remnants of Polis Massa that was established in the Jedi Fallen Order video game, and so is the Haxian Brood, the Crank Middle Gang from the video game. Yet another moment of kind of a great, great synergy across all the storytelling, I think.
Love that. Yep. No, I like that.
And Sylar Saris, the Slayer of Ordo Eris, which is just a great vocal exercise.
Billy Dee Williams used to say that line after Ochi of Bastoon. What did he say? Sylar Saris.
Sylar Saris, the Slayer of Ordo Eris. I went on in good old Wikipedia, and they already this morning had a confirmation that Sylar Saris is the of the Yamri or Huck species. That is infamous from the original cantina scene of the character Kitak Kitak.
That's right. You said it.
Yep. Kitak Kitak. And in legends and in modern canon reference books, the Yamri or Huck species have a feud with the Kalish, a.k.a. Grievous's people. So Sylar's in good company. Yeah. And since I was already down the Yamri rabbit hole, Ken, I was like, wait, wasn't there an insect dude in The Mandalorian? So I looked up Dr. Mandible.
That's right.
That Pelimoto is playing cards with. I looked up Dr. Mandible on Wikipedia. And Wikipedia is hedging their bets. Under species, Dr. Mandible is listed as he is from Dr. Mandible's species.
Safe bet.
So safe. Unconfirmed according to Wikipedia. There you go.
Love that.
There you go. Incredible. All right. Any other canon thoughts from you?
I just wanted to point out, I don't take for granted anytime a Pitroid shows up.
Yeah.
It's fun. And we've come a long way, 25 years from that pod race when a lot of folks, maybe myself included, were like, oh, cute little droids. I love the Pitroids, love when they show up, and they're so great. I love the one that had like the little, like almost like a Legionnaire's hat on and glasses, the guy, the bartender, know what's going on. I think they're just great. I love them.
Finding their way, being individuals, great, great stuff. This is a great segue to talk about favorite moments. We can talk action, comedy, the weird, the heartbreaking, whatever you want. Where do you go, Ken?
Yeah, this is and so in terms of moments, there was it's more of a straightforward episode. But let's just Omega and Wrecker, Omega and Crosshair is a comedy duo. Just continues to work for me. I love the She's a Liberator of Ancient Wonders, Silence Pirate. She's a pirate. Great comedy. The You Don't Like Anything moment spoke to me. So like all that. The creepy Sylar on the ceiling reveal was one of my favorite moments. Love that. Really, really creepy. I know we're in like the Florida Everglades, but it also had like, I don't know, like some, like, I don't know, deer hunter or something going on just with Hunter's face, some kind of Rambo like esque fight.
Yeah. Reminded me of like True Detective season one and you know, many other sort of creepy, like there's a serial killer in that swamp and they're in a cabin and they've got it kitted out with booby traps. Like,
yes.
It wasn't just action. It was so creepy. Sylar on the ceiling was a great shot and a great reveal. Yeah. And I loved the whole fight. Just real effective, real creepy. Actually got nervous for our heroes. Mm-hmm. I love the number of stun bolts he takes.
A ton.
I love the spitting on Wrecker's face.
That was great.
You know, playing with the, like, yeah. Let's add that into another special edition of A New Hope. Where
now I want to see Dr. Mandible do that in a card game.
Yeah, oh, he's pretty good card player, but watch out for the Venom spit.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just that there were so many great delights in this episode that were contributing to the vibe. You know, including that great shot in that whole Sylar action scene, where we know that that Hunter's having a hard time with them, and we see those stun bolt shots just firing into the air from Wrecker's perspective.
Oh, that's great!
Out of the hut, it's just a great image.
Yeah,
Love that. Absolutely great stuff.
No, this is well directed.
Yeah, very well directed and designed and everything.
Yeah,
I did like there were a lot of just great kind of establishing mood of the bar that they met Fennec at.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of pit droids, I really like the pit droid bonking the bar fighter with the bottle.
With the bottle. Yeah. Those droids. Kind of
great bartender that can just run across the bar. And
Well, and,
do everything.
If we were still doing a new Data Bank Brawls, this would be a great new location with Pitroids for a fight.
Oh, yeah.
72% of our episodes were in bars, I think.
Love
that. Love that.
Yeah. Wrecker just straight up punching the space crocs. I always love it when there's like, there's fantasy and, you know, we've had a discussion of like, there's been lots of beasts menacing the Bad Batch and all that. And this to me was like, this isn't these didn't need to be a brave new design for me. It was, it is Wrecker just hauling off and punching them like he's in an Old West saloon fight, you know?
Absolutely. There's some great Wrecker stuff in here. Still love my guy Wrecker. Wrestling the Gators, throwing the one over. Even with Siler, he's got an actual straight up back suplex like he's in a wrestling ring. It was just all wonderful. All Wrecker front and center. Love that.
Yeah. 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 A couple great Wrecker comedy moments for me. I always love it when, you know, Wrecker is almost always just loud and proud and fearless. And he's got his established fear of heights. But I love it when they play the joke of tough guy gets nervous and Bennett tells him not to go in the water. And he's like, why? What's in the water?
So good. It's the water. Yeah.
So good. And then kind of on the other side of things, when he's communicating with Fennec and he screams, you heard me. And he got the good feedback on Fennec's comm. Nice comm.
No, the comedy is pitch perfect in this series, as always.
Yeah.
As always.
Yeah, you highlighted the Omega and Crosshair stuff I liked, but there's the grumpiness of Crosshair just greeting her with a grimace. But I loved the callback to everything that I think first Fee episode was about, of this idea of I'm not a pirate, I'm a liberator of ancient wonders. And that episode was really about Fee encouraging Omega to kind of enjoy things being fanciful and fun and dazzling. Like, remember, the Batch is all grumpy about that mission.
Yeah.
And Omega's like starry eyed and wanting to perceive things is wonderful and beautiful. And it goes along with her feeling trapped on Kamino and never getting to see the galaxy. And now that she does, she's going to marvel at it.
Yeah.
And Fee encouraging her, like, yep, that's the way to look at the world. So it isn't just this joke of Fee going, I'm not a pirate, I'm a liberator of ancient wonders. Even the way Omega delivers it to Crosshair, she does this sort of like little bow, like she's saying a beautiful poetic phrase, a wonderful thing to be shared, which only makes Crosshair's grimace funnier, you know?
I'm right there with you. Again, the interplay between them is wonderful. But again, going back to an episode that from last season that was a character builder in so many ways.
Yeah. In the I'm not gonna like it, am I? You don't like anything, sigh, true. Great comedy, but I also think, you know, it's one of those comedy lines where there's real heart to the relationship in that of them understanding each other. And it's the kind of joke that Crosshair can make because you get me. And, you know, I don't like anything new. And I trust you because you know where I'm coming from, and you're giving me the space to feel the way I feel.
Yeah, love safety.
You're not asking me to be happy-go-lucky about this. You know that ain't me. I really like that.
Yeah, that. In the same vein, there's some great moments where Batcher, she's kind of nestling up against Crosshair. Like, she's there. Like, hey, buddy, I got you too. I'm here. Yeah. I want you to heal.
I love how omnipresent she is. That she's there when they're meditating. She's there in that beautiful shot. You know, the meditating shot on Pabu is just gorgeous. Peaceful. And
it's great. That's great.
Yeah, I think last moment I wanted to mention is I like that the show is keeping Tech alive, at least by people talking about him, and I liked Fee mentioning him in particular since she had, you know, great affection for him. Tech's brain was the data bank, not mine.
I'm glad you mentioned that. It made me think, and I was even going to ask you, I still think there's room to have Tech 2.0 or the dark vision that you've shared of what could be. But that line coming from Fee just made me think, he's gone, right? That this is the way they keep him alive. I'm not sold on that as 100% thought or prediction for myself, but it had that energy to me. almost like telling us he is gone. Yes, we did that. And there's no other way you might see him again other than these memories shared by the people who meant so much to him. And
yeah, my thought for a way that he might feature in this season was that, you know, Rampart and Emery had cloned him, so he would still be tech, but without his experiences, which would be a fascinating, you know, dissection of how much are you, you know, your DNA versus your experiences. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if the show is going in that direction or what, you know, I think there's still so many fireworks to go off once everybody sort of marshals the dwindling clone forces to get their brothers out.
Yeah.
What obstacles are thrown in their way. And also, you know, I know some people think the CX mystery operative is tech. I think that's still a possibility. I know a lot of people think it's Cody, like, but I still think there's possibilities. And even if he never comes back in any version, I do like that his memory and the wound of losing him and the gift of having known him is still present.
Yeah, that's kind of what I took from it. Again, I'm not sold on that being the final thing. But yeah, there's a lot of room in the show. But I'm with you. There's just a vibe that it's not quite going that way. And that this is a way to acknowledge the pain that we all have felt, but that he's still alive in our hearts.
I think I didn't expect Crosshair to do such heavy lifting in the season.
Same. Yeah.
And I think that changes my feelings on it because the Crosshair is taking up a lot of the space that Tech did and did a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of, you know, some of the comedy, some of the drama, some of the, in season two, Tech was really evolving and, you know, having like that great racer episode where he's like, wait, my skills can be applied many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think Crosshair is filling a void, but not my soul. I just want him back. Want Tech back.
Just want my guy back.
As we begin to wrap up here, was there anything that you disliked or questioned in this episode?
No, not at all. I know, you know, people want us to rip apart some things sometimes. It's not going to happen with this show for me. It's such a warm, friendly show. It's such an uplifting show, even when it gets dark. And even an episode like that, this is an episode that might not be on my replay list if I'm running through the season faster, you know. But it doesn't need to be. They got the time, and there's such strong character work in this episode that it's important to me. So, no, I'm good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I understand the critique that episodes like these are slow build plot-wise. We've advanced the M count story. We have triggered this episode has triggered something with Fennec that's going to pay off. It's potential that Crosshair made a huge step forward. So there's absolutely, I think, vital storytelling happening in this episode. But I also do understand, you know, if you really love this show, if you're really counting down the days, just kind of feel like I'm so excited for this show. Can I have a bigger meal? I get that. That's not a criticism of the show. I think the show has played fair with how it tells its story and how much story it doles out per episode. And if it doesn't work for you, so be it. But I think it is the show. You know, that said, I once it's all done, my wife hasn't watched Bad Batch with me. And when it's all said and done, I really want to share it with her. And I'll admit, like, it's nice to think like, well, for some of these episodes, you know, we won't just watch this episode. We'll watch two or three episodes. And for my wife, the story will play out a little bit faster.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Is there anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
All good. Excited for what's to come. And we'll see who shows up, Hemlock or Ventress on that hologram or Silas Salar, whatever, his cousin. I don't know.
Yeah. I hope it's Dengar.
Yeah.
Couple just little things for me. We always talk about how beautiful the animation was. I think the animation in the art design and the lighting design is all just, it creates the vibes. That's the murkiness, the shadows. The lighting in that bar was so damn good.
The
delicious purple on one side, the green on the other, just really evoking this sort of a lurid pulpiness that just the darkness combined with the bright color where a person's face is. This side is purple, this side is green, period. So cool. I love the electronic dance music in there. I would happily go to that bar.
Totally.
I'd be scared, but I'd go to that bar. There's also just a beautiful establishing shot of the port on the swamp planet where they're tracking Sylar. Of, you know, it's all misty and orange and like poisonous orange, but it's just really framed beautifully where that base fills the entire widescreen frame. And it's just like beautifully, perfectly composed way.
Yeah.
That I just love that establishing shot. Final thing for me, Omega's jacket's real cool. I like her Pabu
jacket.
I'm a little bit more relaxed, and she's got a pretty cool, like, Poe Dameron would wear that jacket. It's got a couple of, like, the lines on the arm and some cool, like, blue shoulder flare.
You're right. Another, put it in the pantheon of Star Wars jackets.
That's right. We'll do a Subjective Wars episode about jackets. Whose jacket wins? But that is it for our look. We always like to wrap up with a fun question about merch. If you could have an action figure or any other kind of merch from any character or idea from this episode, what would you want, Ken?
I want to go back to like an old school board game. Instead of Hungry Hungry Hippos, I want Hungry Hungry Space Gators. And the marbles are, you know, painted to represent like Wrecker and Hunter and everyone. And you got to slap that gator, eat those marbles.
Punch that gator.
Punch that gator.
I want a double pack Sylar Cerys action figure. Sylar's just super cool. All the hissing and the growling in the I believe the only actual dialogue is just saying Fennec Shand's name, which is always a creepy thing when you see someone just to say their name. If every time somebody saw you, they're just like, Ken Napsok. But I want a double pack of normal Sylar Cerys and then a Sylar who's just painted blue and you can pretend to stun him.
Oh, okay. That's great.
Yeah,
I love this.
And failing that, soon, hopefully we can all buy on 4K Blu-ray Omega's meditation videos so we can all.
Omega yoga.
Omega yoga.
All of it's there. Money to be made.
Yeah, and like, yoga by Adrian is the real popular real world one. So yoga DDT by yoga, Omega.
We can do that.
Be great stuff. All right, Ken, you want to let people know where they can find us?
I do. We're the Force Center Podcast and the Force Center Show here on YouTube. If you're watching, we're on Twitter and Threads and Instagram at Force Center Pod. We're on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. Hive, if you're still over there for the three people that are, forgot about that. Also, you can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. In terms of the podcast, we're pretty much everywhere. Just search, you'll find us. Look on Apple Podcasts. Leave a review if you're over there. We are also on Patreon if you want to support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. From there, you can get to our Discord and continue the discussion all week long to the next Bad Batch episode. You can follow me at Catnapsock or go to my website, catnapsock.com, for information on upcoming stand-up shows. Got an Easter show in Burbank at Flappers on Easter evening. We'll do some peeps and egg hunting and all that good stuff, I'm sure. And then Mark Ellis and I will be in Boston in April. Two shows, information there. Sir, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on most of the social media. I'm on Blue Sky. I am on Threads. I'm on Mastodon. I'm on Instagram. My handle is at Joseph Scrimshaw at all of those places. You can also check out my blog newsletter. I put out a new edition every Tuesday talking about my life and creative adventures and helping encourage people to make little mini goals and stick them. It has helped me so much to be honest every week about my goals and saying, like, this is a week where I can kind of take on something big. And other weeks, like, no, my goal is going to be make one list of things I have to do. Yeah, survive. That's it. The blog is called Finish Your Monsters. If you'd like to subscribe, you can just Google my name, Joseph Scrimshaw, and Finish Your Monsters. That is it for me. This has been the Bad Batch Report.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree.
That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.